Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, you mutts? It's another edition of KFC Radio. It's out right now on Thanksgiving Eve, the biggest day to get your fuck on. And if you go back to your high school stomping grounds tonight, you're trying to right some wrongs. I said this on radio. The reason I like Thanksgiving Day Eve is because it's the only holiday rooted in righting wrongs and erasing regrets. It's the only holiday that is designed to go back and, like, but if you're George Costanza and you've got the jerk store line that you've been thinking of for a year or 2 years or 5 years, you go back and you show up at that old watering hole and you drop that jerk store line. You go get the girl who got away. You go, like, talk shit to the person who pissed you off. It's the anti-regret holiday. And that's the only thing in life where we all agree, like, one day a year is your chance to, like, go to this reunion of sorts and flex on people or fix, you know, get it right this time. And if you go out and you're like, this is the one who got away, I'm gonna fuck her tonight. And then you put in some lame 2 minute effort. Well, then you got to go back next year and write that. And you got to go, you know, this is just a self-fulfilling prophecy here where every single Thanksgiving Eve, you're going to try to tack on like an additional minute. No, just get yourself some Roman swipes, help that sex last longer. And then, you know, that girl will truly regret, oh, I should have dated him in high school. I should have married him instead. Because when you got the Roman swipes, your sex lasts longer. It's better. It's more enjoyable for her and for you. You feel like a rock star. You fuck like a rock star. You start to act like a rock star. It's the ultimate. It's another self-fulfilling prophecy where all of a sudden you don't even need the swipes because you're confident and you're delivering and you feel good. And it's all because of this cheap little $5 swipe. You buy for $5, you get a month's supply of swipes. You open them up. You rub them on your dick. It numbs you a little bit. You can still feel the sensation, but it numbs you so that you last longer. And, she enjoys it. You enjoy it. And it's not no prescription necessary. No scent, no irritation, no issues. It's all good, all gravy, all tested, safe, and very affordable. When you go to GetRoman.com/mailtime, you can get those swipes for just $5. Could change your life. Butterfly effect. You use the swipes tonight on Thanksgiving Eve by going to GetRoman.com/mailtime. You might become a totally different person down the road because nothing else in this world is designed to right your wrong.
Like Thanksgiving Eve is, it brings back nostalgia just talking about it. Like not even if I went to the Thanksgiving Eve bar now, it would be so many generations removed. Like the people would be so young, but yeah. I'm having nostalgia for like nostalgia night. You know, I'm having nostalgia for the nights where we would go back and we would see people because we were like 3 or 4 years out of college. So, you know, like 8 years out of high school. And even then you would be like, wait a minute, you're old enough to drink. Now it's like the literally children would be in that bar.
No, you have like a 10-year window. And then when that's closed, you're just officially, you know, then it comes back around when you're like 60, you can go back and you're like you're the guy who's like, yo, this dude's like 65 and he came on back to drink. He's cool again.
But see, I think we thought those people were 65 and I think they were probably more like 45. We were like, look at this old man here. And that would literally be me.
That is true. You're probably right on that. But there's no other chance. You know, like the amount of people, you know what the play should be right now? If I was in high school right now, I'd be like, you should fuck me now, so that you don't have to fuck me 5 years from now and know you got it wrong. Like, I'm going to come back here right now. You know, you're dating a senior and I'm a sophomore and there's guys cooler, but I'm going to come back after college and after I graduate from college and you're going to be like, damn, I should have fucked that guy. So just do it now, girl. Just fuck him now.
I hope some guy can go like, you know, he's 18 years old and he's talking to some girl and he could say, listen, I listen to this podcast with these old guys and they're like, high school is not really that important. And it's really just about having fun, or even college too. And it's like, we all think that this matters so much. We think it's so important. You're 18 years old. You're dating a girlfriend. You think you're going to marry that girl. You think you're going to date her forever. And it's, that's probably not going to happen. And we should probably just live in the moment. And I hope that they get laid just off of that.
You know what it is? For guys, it's the holiday to right your wrongs and erase your regrets. And for girls, it's the holiday that initiates the regret.
I was gonna say, like, let's go make some regrets, you know, like some people say, let's go make some memories. Regrets.
No. They are the girl who's like, you're right, I shouldn't have fucked the high school like quarterback. He ended up to be a total fucking dud. And, you know, it turned out that, you know, all the guys who I was friend zoning or I wasn't into are the dudes who are like doing good now. So Thanksgiving Eve for the guys, it's like everything else for guys and girls is, you know, it's always inversely proportionate, correlated, you know. You get older and things get worse for you girls. We get older, we get more money, we age better, you know, all those things. Same thing with Thanksgiving Eve. It's a chance for us to get back and figure some things out. And for you, it's like, oh, this is going to make you realize that you didn't have things figured out and that you're still
I wonder, you know how like nerd culture is cool culture now? Do you think like nice guys are smashing? You think like nice guys are like, like, cause the girls like are more aware. The girls have all the information. They know that they shouldn't be friend zoning guys. So they're like, wait, you're a skinny, nerdy kid who might be the next Zuckerberg. So you might, you know, you might look at that guy and go, this kid got straight A's. I gotta fuck him.
I think there's something like primal and biological that still happens on some, you know, DNA level. That's like, this guy is the popular one and the strong one and the jaw and the muscles, so I'm gonna fuck him.
But wouldn't that be weird if girls could realize that and look and be like, imagine they actually analyzed it like really intelligently and they were like, you are the star quarterback, but we go to a school with like 120 people. That means that you beat out like five other guys that you possibly could, like, you are not really as elite as you currently seem.
Yes.
Now you go to like a four, you know, you're in the middle of Texas and you're the star QB. Like you're getting attention from like, you know, Bama and shit like that. It's like, okay, maybe you're the one. But you just, you know, you go to like some school in Westchester, you're probably going to be a nobody.
Yeah, no, that would take a level of analysis that I don't think you have at that age as a girl.
As a 16-year-old girl. Yeah. Or as a 16-year-old boy, probably. Because I was just as enamored with the quarterback. I was like, fuck, I wish I could be him. And then, you know, he, you know, flopped out of like minor league ball. He didn't even play football. He tried to play baseball and washed out of single A ball.
Do you remember old school internet, pre-Barstool, the Craigslist ad about the depreciating asset?
Yes. So where supposedly some guy like, you know, Jamie Dimon wrote that or something like that. Wasn't it supposed to be like some celebrity was
probably
smashing somebody?
Like the twist at the end, but this is, I just looked this up. It's from 2007. Woman seeks rich husband. Banker says that's a crappy deal.
Banker, yeah.
So Deal or No Deal, an online exchange between a woman looking for a husband who earns more than $500,000 and a mystery Wall Street banker who assessed her potential has caused quite the internet
stir. Do we think there's any truth to any of this? Or do you think this is just completely fabricated?
It was the OG days of like Craigslist where I don't know if people were really faking things at that point. You think they were?
I think it's a possibility, but I also think that somebody might have really just thrown this out there.
Yeah. So this 25-year-old woman hops on Craigslist and it says she's looking for advice on how to find a wealthy husband. I know how that sounds, but keep in mind that a million a year is middle class in New York City. So I don't think I'm overreaching at all. The woman described herself as spectacularly beautiful and superficial. She wrote,
and superficial.
I dated a businessman who makes average around 200 to 250, but that's where I seem to hit a roadblock. 250,000 won't get me to Central Park West, she said. Where do rich single men go to hang out? The mystery banker, who said he fit the bill, offered the woman an analysis of her predicament, describing it as plain and simple, a crappy business deal. Now, I wonder if I could get the exact, this is a a Reuters summary, but I guess they probably hit the highlights anyway. This is not the full old Craigslist ad, but he replied and said, and I remember this, and I remember reading this, and this spoiler, what do they call it? Trigger warnings for everyone listening. You're about to hear the most misogynistic, superficial thing, just saying, your looks will fade and my money will likely continue into perpetuity. In fact, it is very likely that my income increases, but it is an absolute certainty that you won't be getting any more beautiful. So in economic terms, you are a depreciating asset and I am an earning asset. Let me explain. You're 25 now and will likely stay pretty hot for the next 5 years, but less so each year. Then the fade begins in earnest. By 35, stick a fork in you. It doesn't make good sense. It doesn't make good business sense to, quote, buy you, which is what you're asking.
Oh, God.
So I'd rather lease. So, it became like an email that went around.
Yeah, chain email. That's how I came across it.
Yeah, it got removed from the woman removed Craigslist because she got fucking roasted.
Was it like a response on Craigslist that everyone else could see?
Yeah, I think so. That's what it sounds like. It was like an open forum, I guess.
Oh, a forum. Okay.
It led to one of its bankers being mistakenly credited with it. Brian, I'm not even going to say his name. I don't want to stir it back up for him. He's probably like, fuck, dude.
This podcast 20 years later.
That he did not write the response, that his email signature accidentally became attached to the ad.
So that guy did write it. Yeah, don't mention his name because that guy did it.
So this was probably a huge thing on Take a Report with Large.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt they covered this back in 07. But
that was like, wasn't there something called like the Daba girls or it was like dating a banker or something like that? D-A-B, something like that. There was a site where it was just like some girls fucking around. Trying to
Daba girl. There it looks like there still is Daba girl, but I do remember that. Yeah.
Dating a iBanker or something like that. Cause yeah. I remember when it crashed, I think they stopped in 2008, when the economy crashed and they were like, there's no more banker guys. Like they were like, what do we do now? I remember reading a post. They were like, what do we do now? Media guys. I was like, go get yourself a blogger or a podcaster.
Yeah, I mean that used to be like hot in New York, man. That was it. That was like the scene, you know. These yuppies who were all making money. The guys were in banking, the girls were in like HR or PR, and you would all like sign up for like a charity that you didn't give a fuck about, but would go to their like banquets and galas. And
I mean, I think everybody had a friend who made it like pretty big. Like they were, you know, 24 years old, working legitimately like 26 hours a day, but they were bringing in like 500 grand. It was like, holy shit.
Right. No bills, no kids, no nothing. Just like,
yeah. Honestly though, I
cocaine habit and your strip club bill and you're good to go.
Honestly though, I knew a dude and I was like, even making that much money, I was like, I don't think this is worth it. Cause the guy would pop out. He would go so hard. We party, he would buy us all our drinks. So that was terrific. But then I remember him telling me his girlfriend, who I'm sure he had many girlfriends, but the main girl that would always come out with us was like, I wake up and I eat cereal in the bathroom to not wake him up, because like whenever, you know, whatever moments he has to sleep, these guys are, and I don't know what, I guess they were trading and it's just like they had to be ready at all times.
I know the guys who are making big money being like not working that hard. They're like the guys who are the personable dudes who at least prior to COVID and shit were the guys like, I'll take you golfing and I'll take you out to the steak dinner.
Right.
And you just throw me your business because you scratch your back, I scratch mine. You're making several hundred thousand and you're not doing that. That's the fucking gravy train.
Right.
But or that like early 2010s, like everybody signed up for like a fucking, you know, what was Raggi? Raggi used to be in go-to. Remember that, like go-to events,
right?
Some fucking foreign this or whatever that, and they would just be like, you know, everybody just dress up and go fuck each other and act like that's where you're gonna find your husband or what, you know, whatever. And it was so hot. And then it was like the fall of Gotham when the crash hit. It was like, yeah, you know, you guys got in too late. Like you know, you're fucked. Now you have to go do something else. But man, I remember that email circulating around about the depreciating asset that was just like, oh my God, this is the meanest fucking thing I've ever heard.
It was ether. It was like, RIP that girl.
And you know what's funny? That the guy who wrote it, like depreciating assets, not like a fucking investo. That's an investopedia term that you just, right. You know, like he probably wasn't even hot shit either. He was probably like some fucking low level idiot too.
Oh yeah. That was like some, you know, a kid who took an econ class probably wrote that.
Exactly. But this is all to say that the nostalgia night is where, you know, a lot of that stuff, the girl who stood you up or acted like that or whatever.
Is your Thanksgiving Eve bar the same as mine? Because you know what mine is, right? What bar would you guys go? Yeah, Public House.
I never really did it. There was a time where we would just go out in the city. Like, because I still hung out with my high school friends a decent amount when I was back in college. So, like, we would go to, like, one time we went to a couple clubs on Thanksgiving.
Well, that's what it is. It's either the biggest party, like, you go all out and you pop bottles with people you already know, or you go to your hometown bar and see everybody.
Yeah, do, like, the watering hole. I never really did that as much. I don't know. I mean,
Public House was crazy. Public House was, like, the old man bar 364 days out of the year. We would go there because it was just, like, close to my buddy's house.
Right.
And then Thanksgiving Eve, it was like 18-year-olds showed up. Everybody from 18 to 40 showed up, and it was packed. I mean, this place literally had like five people at most in it on most nights. A couple guys playing pool, playing darts, go smoke weed in like the back patio area. And then it was like they needed a bouncer on Thanksgiving
Eve. Right.
Bananas. And like the quarterbacks were behind the bar, like literally the guy, the varsity quarterback was a bartender. They was a guest bartending for Thanksgiving Eve. And you saw every generation there. Let's go back now and really just be like the old man. Like people be like, oh my God, do you see that old guy? He has gray hair.
I could see like Thanksgiving Eve like being canceled. Like it's not a thing. Yeah. Like no, not even because of COVID.
Not even now. Oh.
Yeah, just like, you know, it's like predatory. We don't want like old people coming. I don't know, some soft.
Yeah, they're like, oh, because they would always say more beer is drank on Thanksgiving Eve than any other night. And they're like, oh, you support binge drinking? And it's like
some soft shit like
sorry.
That.
Sorry. I guess not. But I feel bad for that generation. I'm like, you guys should go out and rage. I mean, I wouldn't anymore. I'm like, it was, you know, there are many times where it completely ruined Thanksgiving. Like, I was too old to be drinking that much. And I was like, I feel absolutely terrible. I have to be around my family. I'm literally falling asleep at the table. My mom's going to be mad at me for the next 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even worth it because we were at the old man bar drinking with the people that you always drink with. So I was like, this was a terrible idea, but you should do it anyway.
If you don't use it to right your wrongs and make it into this grand dramatic thing that I'm painting it to be, then it can just be any other night. But yeah, I feel for that generation. I am, however, jealous of the new generation because they can go watch Chappelle's show on HBO guilt-free.
What is this? What's going on with us now?
Boycott HBO. Boycott Chappelle's show. Dave Chappelle is such a fucking gangster. He has started the Boycott Chappelle Show movement. It's his own fucking show.
But isn't that because he's not making money off it anymore?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure that's all clear.
I don't know what this clip is from. It's obviously, it's after he did, I don't know if this is out anywhere other than his Instagram, but he put up an 18-minute clip on his Instagram. It's after his SNL election night appearance. So it's got to be within the last couple of weeks. And he explains, and it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome. You know, I've heard people describe Chappelle as like the greatest communicator on earth right now. Mm-hmm. Like he's not even like a comedian anymore. He's doing that. Cause like the George Ferguson 8-minute 46-second thing was not like stand-up comedy. There was some humor in it, but that was like a speech, you know?
Right.
And his interviews are so like introspective and heavy now that it's not really comedy anymore. And this was like, he's, you know, he's still smoking his cigarettes and he's got like the audience around him. And it feels like you're listening to like Socrates or Aristotle, or like
modern day philosopher. Yeah.
Yeah. Gather around. I'm going to tell you some parables and some fables and like speak, you know, like in riddles and teach you shit. So he explains two stories. He says, one, he once made a joke about a Goodyear blimp condom. It's like Goodyear should manufacture a condom. I don't even remember what it was about, but it was funny and it killed. He said he was 15 at the time. He was doing stand-up when he was 15. And this guy came up to him in the club and said, like an old timer, and was like, yo, that's a really funny joke. You mind if I borrow it? I'm just going to use it in my set like tomorrow at the club. And Dave's like, okay, I guess so, you know? And then like he runs into, he's performing like a year or whatever later, I don't know the time frame, in another club, and he hears that guy on stage still using it. And he went up to him and was like, "Hey, dude, I thought you were, you know, you're going to borrow my joke. I thought you were going to give it back." And he's like, "Yeah, I meant to talk to you about that. How about I buy that joke for you for $50? And Chappelle was like, "No, man, I got, you know, I'm trying to build my set, and I just need as much jokes as I got." And the guy like stood up over him, like a grown man over this 15-year-old kid, and said like, "Well, I'm just going to take it then. Like, fuck you." And Chappelle was like, "All right, that was like my first lesson that I learned of people just like taking shit from you." And he tells another story. He was walking on the street and he was on a date with this girl, and he was broke and he only had a little bit of money left, but he saw this three-card Monty, and he said he watched for a little bit, and he was watching people win and get excited and hyped up. And he noticed that the red card had a little bend in the corner. He thought he figured it out. And the dude, he loses the remaining money he had. And Dave quickly realizes that all the other people who are quote unquote winning are in on the act. And the guy, another guy comes by to pay. And Chappelle goes, "Don't do it. This guy's a fucking scammer." And the guy grabbed him by the fucking throat, threw him up against the wall, and was ready to like kill him. And he said he does this, you know, obviously I'm just ripping through the story here. He's doing it in like this eloquent way and like really storytelling. And he says the only reason he didn't get his ass beat was because he said he thought he saw the fear in his eyes. And he realized that he just had like this kid by the neck, and that this young kid didn't realize what he had just done. And he said to him, like, "Young man, don't ever get between a man and his meal." And he was like, "And that was like the first time I learned, like, you don't fuck with someone's money." And so, you know, he set the stage in a dramatic way. And then he applies both of those stories to his Chappelle show. And it's basically the Taylor Swift situation, but he's saying, you know, "I don't make any money off those." And, you know, as an artist, kind of same thing as Taylor. It's like, I created this, and this is my thing and my creation and my art, and I don't get any money for it. So he calls Netflix and says, and this is where, you know, I'm going to boycott Chappelle's show because A, I'm just like afraid that somebody, you know, what's so funny? I watched Chappelle's show last night. I didn't have anything else to watch. I was dead tired. I was like, let me just watch one 20-minute episode. I watched episode one. And today, I didn't see Boycott Chappelle until like 7 p.m. tonight. In the middle of the fucking afternoon, I swear to God, I was about to tweet, "I'm going to go home tonight because it's Friday for me. Like, I'm off for the rest of the week." I was going to say, "I am going to marathon Chappelle's show.
Oh, that would have been a bad luck.
And I didn't know what was going on. And people would have obviously thought that, you know, I could never claim ignorance. I'm up on everything on the internet. Right. It's trending on Twitter, hashtag boycott Chappelle show. But people would have obviously assumed I knew what it was talking about and chose to continue to marathon it. I probably would have been singled out as like a white boy, fucking white supremacist, alt-right asshole. So thank God I didn't say it.
You're like, "I stand with Comedy Central. I would like the executives of Comedy Central to continue to make their money."
So it's HBO. That's who he's got the beef with. So he said he calls Netflix, because I was watching it on Netflix last night. Netflix has pulled it down because he called them up.
Oh, wow.
He said, "This makes me feel not good." And now Netflix, they've done, like, they did that like three special $60 million deal with him. So they've got, you know, skin in the game. Dave Chappelle is like going to be a part of their future. So they're like, "Oh yeah, we're fucking pulling it down." HBO Max, they're struggling. HBO Max did not do well on its launch. I think people are way too confused with HBO Go, HBO so Max, much, yeah. HBO Max. I don't even get it. And I'm pretty savvy with this shit. I still didn't really understand it. They launched during Corona. It was just not good, you know? So they're probably like, "We need everything we can get." And they don't have like ties to Dave Chappelle. So I think they're kind of like, "Fuck off, man."
Right.
And I am not going to watch because I somehow feel like it's the right thing to do. Like, Dave Chappelle has given to me and I owe it to him. I also feel like some infinitesimal shred of like being a creator. Right. And I sympathize with him on that level. And then there's this third thing of like, I feel like I'm going to get caught somehow and like shamed if I were to watch an episode. But for HBO, I can understand them being like, "Bro, like, the game's the game." And that's where I think this whole thing is interesting. I think that Dave Chappelle is the only man on earth, the only entertainer, creator, whatever you want to call it, artist on earth that could do this. Like, I think even when Taylor Swift says, don't listen to Scooter Braun's, when she puts out her new shit, people will switch over. But right now, if you're at a party and you're a Taylor Swift fan or whatever, you want to go for a run and listen to your favorite songs, you're going through a breakup, you just fucking listen. I'm a grown-ass man alone in my apartment, and I am not putting Chappelle's show on my TV. I'm not doing it. I'm literally afraid, and I feel this duty. I feel this, you know, I'm beholden to him, and that's a testament to how good he is. It's a testament to kind of how dramatic he is.
And it's strictly because he's not making money, though. It's not like well, it was too, you know, insensitive or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't. Yes, it's just that because I watched about 17 of the 18 minutes. So there couldn't have been much more, but it was just like, but he says, at one point he like goes through, he says something like, I signed the contract. I think Comedy Central, somebody along the way said like, but you signed the contract. Mm-hmm. And he says like, now is that right? And the audience goes like, no, boo. And I'm kind of like,
right.
I don't know, man. Like, that's the game. You signed the contract. You had every right to walk away from it, but then you walked away from it. And like, you know, I mean, I feel like that's how it works. Like, you are no longer beholden to them to do the work.
Yeah.
Well, and they're not going to pay you. But then there's also like these episodes that just exist, and the right thing to do and the fair thing to do and the moral thing to do. On a moral level, I agree with Taylor Swift, with Dave Chappelle. You created it. You deserve it. You know, my thing with Taylor is more that I think she deserves the exclusive or first right to buy it. But with Dave Chappelle, it's like, the ones that do exist, yeah, sure, you should get a cut of it. But if you don't because the contract says so, that's also like the lesson you learned with Three Card Monty. That's the lesson you learned here on, you know. And
the one thing I wonder about stuff like this, and there probably is language that covers this in the contract. Like, I don't think that lawyers like give this away, but the way technology has changed and advanced, I think some people were like, I'm signing this away and people are going to watch this and maybe they'll get syndicated and maybe these people will be making money off of reruns. They didn't envision like streaming. They didn't envision that like Friends can be worth $100 million in the year 2020.
The Office would be the number one TV show this year.
Right. You know? So it's like, you know, now, you know, and people learn from your mistakes. Like everybody, if you're a star, you should probably sign, like when you sign a contract to do a show that's like the hit show right now, you should be like, I want like $250 million because you're going to make money off of me for the next 100 years. Yes. So, and then I don't know if those deals will get done, but you know, somebody like, you know, Monica and Chandler and all these guys should have been like, you know, remember they got $1 million an episode. It's like, they're probably underpaid. Yeah. And I just feel sometimes I'm like, again, you know, maybe you should have envisioned that, but Chappelle on, you know, gets a $50 million deal, ends up walking away from it. But he was probably negotiating and thinking like, this is as good as it's going to get, when in reality he could have said, yeah, but what about in the future when, you know, and that stuff can only continue. Well, now if he's shutting it down, he's trying to cut off that fire hose of profits for all these companies. So I get he's fighting fire with fire, but you're right. At the same time, it's just like, well, you did negotiate.
I went to my real bosses. Like he went to the bosses at Netflix and the bosses at HBO. So we don't care. So he's like, so I'm going to my real bosses, the fans, which is smart. Like it's true, but it's also smart. Like he's appealing to the fan by being like, you're my real boss. And you're the ones who really like control the money and blah, blah, blah. So you feel like, you know, we're Dave's boss and we're helping him out. Mm-hmm. So it's like smart, but it's also like you're pandering to the crowd and I get it.
But I think there's something to think if somehow you can repurpose podcasts 20 years from now, and this will probably happen, and Dave can make like literally $1 billion off it because 20 years from now, inflation and everything like that. And, you know, you will have to say, I signed a contract that said I'll do this podcast and I accepted it for a decent amount of money. But like, we didn't know that things were going to change like this, that now you can get paid every single time somebody plays your voice. I don't know. I don't know what it could be.
Well, the difference too, though, is like, I wonder if like in the moment, you know, I remember Chappelle talking about like episode one. Fucking episode one is Clayton Bigsby, you know?
Like, he goes, we are going to get canceled.
Right. I mean, that was always his joke. Like, we're not going to make it through one season, one episode. But he also had to know, like, what did he know, like, this is comedic genius right now?
Like, I don't think he could have known how it would be received. I think he could be like, I know this is fucking funny.
Right.
Like, I know, like, but I don't know if they're ready for it yet.
Like, firing on all cylinders. And so, like, to me, I was thinking about with Taylor Swift, like, if I was an artist right now and Scooter Braun approached me, I would be like, that is a signal that I've got the fucking goods. Mm-hmm. So I'm staying independent, you know? Now, the flip side, I think these things are always like, this is how you get rich right now. And that's what people want to do, is get rich right fucking now. But like, if you're, you know, you're really getting those offers, the smart thing to do probably now is to stay independent, because it means that you're going to be on a streaming service one day. And if you owned all of those episodes, you're going to get trillions of dollars. But it's always about that short-term gain versus the long-term grind. And it's impossible in the moment. I think you have to be insanely cocksure, like so confident in your music or your art or whatever. Like, I think there's something naturally several tiers below when it comes to podcasting. I know that I'm not putting out works of art right now. Right. Whereas, like, you know, those episodes were like beautiful fucking crafted skits of racial, you know, perfect balance of blah, blah, blah. So like in that moment, you have to recognize it, or you just gotta, yeah, maybe you just have to always act like your shit is the goods. Like, yeah, my podcasts are worth it. But, and then you also kind of know when, you know, you've got the cards to play or not. But I feel like, you know,
it's weird now though, because you, like, if you pop off, like, look at where young undiscovered people are really popping. It's like YouTube and TikTok, but like a lot of these metrics are available. It must be weird when you kind of have to go by like what Comedy Central says. Comedy Central sees you as a stand-up comedian. They think you're really funny. Maybe they've seen some movies that you've done. They're like, you're really talented. We're going to sign you to some sort of deal. What comes of it is Chappelle's show. And then it drops. And obviously you can tell, like, he knows he became a star overnight. Like, he knows, yeah, that like he can't walk down the street anymore, but he maybe can see some ratings. But nowadays you just see, like, you're Charli D'Amelio has 100 million followers. She's an icon already at 16, but it must be weird when you have to listen to the numbers that you don't really have access to.
We don't ever have access to our numbers here at Barstool. They do a good job of keeping it like quiet. And like, that's why, you know, I know that I'm successful for Barstool, but I know that I'm really not in a position to ever say, like, I don't need you, Barstool.
Right.
Caller Daddy had enough, like, public reaction that, like, she knew she had the fucking upper hand, or at least, right, like, even hand, you know? She overplayed it and did it stupid and, like, botched it in a way. Had she done it right, I think she would have been sitting pretty. Like, there wasn't that. Yeah, you know, if Dave Chappelle had followers on the internet, he probably would have been like, you know, I don't need this shit. You know, I'm quitting, but also just because I'm going to go make this in my own studio, and right, you know what I mean? Like, so, but my thing is kind of like, isn't that the lesson that he was kind of talking about? He said, like, I'm going to give them your first lesson now. Like, we're boycotting, and, you know, without, I think I didn't watch the very last minute, so maybe he sums it up better. But I think the lesson was like, without me and without the fans, you ain't shit. So you need to like do what's right. But to me, it's like, I think that you're doing the three card Monty thing again, where it's like, they're gonna, you know, they're not gonna.
Well, I always wonder about what those discussions are actually like. Like, if Taylor is saying, like, Scooter, you screwed me and you should give me my masters, I'd be like, listen, come on.
Yeah.
But if she's saying, like, I just want the right to buy them. Now, what is Dave saying? Like, Dave is like, I want this money-making asset to make me money, to go away. I want you to cut me in. I want you to give me 20%. I want you to give me 100%. All those things change the conversation. I think the right thing to do is if he goes to HBO Max and goes, listen, I made this 20 years ago and I'm not seeing anything off it. Do you think that's right? And they come back and they say, we'll give you 5%. He might say, fine, okay, great. That was easy. If they say, fuck you, you don't get a dime, then I understand how he has his reaction. If he wants 75% cut when they have the infrastructure and they bought this from somebody, you know, maybe they didn't buy it from him, but they bought it from somebody.
Taylor, no, I mean, LeBron paid $300 million for something. He's like, I got to make my return on this.
Right.
I'm a business now.
Yeah. You know, if you catch somebody riding your stolen bike, you know, you go, give me that fucking bike back. It's like, I'm sorry this happened to you, dude. But like, I bought this bike, right. You know, I didn't realize it was illegal, but I can't just give you this bike back.
For sure. Now, like, I think with Taylor, she was offered, I think, the chance to buy the entire music label. And I think she was like, I don't want the whole label. I want my music. And then I think since then, it's been that she's getting bought and sold without even like her knowledge, or she hasn't a chance to
buy
it.
But I could also see being like, I don't have to put this on the open market. I can find, like, you know, Jeff Wilpon was like, I want to sell this to Alex Rodriguez. Now, he couldn't, because this guy was just like completely outbidding. But I could understand being like, I want to get this quick and easy transaction done. I don't want my name dragged through the mud. You're allowed to sell to who you want to.
For sure. Also, like, wouldn't it just like open market and Taylor, who's desperate for them, like, you're going to get more money.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, like, there are people richer than her. I don't know.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, but like, and then you can sell it to them, I guess, you know?
Right. Like, if she get, like, yeah, that's why I put it on the market.
I don't know, maybe the only thing worse than what's currently going on is that if the public knew Taylor had a bid in and you just said no to her, then maybe you're the asshole.
Right. Yeah. I think that he's probably just like, this is going to get messy if I let her get involved. I just want to take $500 million. And,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. They don't give a fuck about, like, I couldn't believe when Chappelle phrased it as, I called Netflix and said, this makes me feel not good. It's HBO being like, oh, your widow feelings are hurt. We don't give a fuck, you know? Right, now, what's crazy is that Chappelle is just A, so beloved and so talented, and B, there's this heavy, like, racial undertone as well, where, like, the reason why he quit was, like, people laughing at him and not with him. And he felt like he was being exploited by like the white man and all, you know, a lot of that shit. So now all of a sudden, you know, you're a white exec at HBO telling Dave Chappelle to fuck off. I think, you know, you're going to see more backlash than just like business, you know?
I mean, I think there is a return on investment to like just being a decent person nowadays. Like you know, it's just like your reputation matters. I think more than ever. I can't say like I 100% know that, but it's just like doing the right thing earns you. Wow. What were we talking about recently where we were just like, the move here is just to do the right thing and all your PR will take over, will cover the consequences of not maximizing every single dollar. I feel like we were talking about it recently. I don't remember exactly what it was.
I know what you're talking about. Something COVID related or something. But I remember being like, it's so short-sighted to not understand the value.
I think it was the owners. The owners, like,
like owners being like, we're going to pay you guys full salary, take a hit this year, and we put America on our back and brought baseball back.
Right. Wow. Instead, you nickel and dime them. Yeah. And even if that deal didn't get done, the PR bump of you guys saying, we will do this. And you know, Steve Cohen stepping in and immediately like paying everyone that had been laid off, because it costs like a couple $100,000. Like, just do that. That is because you would normally pay a PR firm to like run an ad that makes you look good. And it's like, no, I'm just going to do the right thing. The ads are social media. People will talk about this.
And that's the best kind. How about Sherwin fucking Williams, the dumbest goddamn company in the world? You can make
masterclass in being dumb.
Sherwin Williams firing an employee for making viral TikToks about mixing paint. Given the circumstances of how insanely funny and boring and lame the topic is, mixing paint colors and the consequences for it, add that all up, you could make the argument that's the dumbest business decision in history.
If I'm like Lowe's or Home Depot or any other competitor, I'm like, here's $100,000.
Well, not Jared, because he's a fucking rapist, but, you know, turn him into your fucking, the face of your franchise, the fucking, whoever, I don't know, who else is Jared from Subway? Another version of that, who's not a pedophile, but you know what I mean. Like that, all of a sudden, you know, for the first time in human history, people took an interest in mixing paint. And you put the kibosh on it right away?
And all you got to do is throw a little promo code down there. Every video of his is just like, and also 20% off your paint. Done. Like, people will go buy paint because I mean, it's not like it would necessarily drive people who are not buying paint to buy paint, but many more people would know about Sherwin-Williams' deal on paint right now. And if you need to buy it, you'd go there.
What could that possibly be? Like you're giving away proprietary color mixing or something? Like,
yeah, I mean, they listed that they were like, you were using a company material and equipment. And then he was like, listen, like maybe the first two or three, I just like swiped out of the stock room, but then I started buying them because I was like, I need to do this a lot. And he was like, I don't want to get in trouble. So he started buying the paint and doing it. And yeah, he was probably still using the company machine. All that is like, you're within your rights to fire someone. If like somebody was just like fucking around with the paint and you were, and they were like costing you inventory. Yes, you could. But it's like this guy stumbled upon something that's
an opportunity. It's so insane. It's like the bonkers. Like you had.
He reached out to them. He made a deck and he sent it to the marketing team. He was like, he told them that he was doing this. Yeah. He didn't like get caught. He said, guys, I think that this could be great for the company. He loved this company that he mixes paints so that he wanted to make them money. It'd be like if you Dave, I got a new idea for a podcast. It's already done like 2 million downloads. And he was like, you're fired. Like, what does that?
We came close. We didn't get fired, but was he doing like major numbers?
I think he was doing significant numbers. I don't know.
It's almost like those like satisfying videos, like watching the paint get mixed or something.
Yeah. And he was doing some, like weird, interesting things. Yeah. So it was like,
I mean, insanity. The only time in the history of humanity that mixing paint has been deemed interesting by the public and you shut it down. I mean, it's crazy. So yeah, I mean, Netflix did the right thing by taking it down. I think the smart thing would have been to be like, you know what HBO should do? I mean, again, HBO Max is hurting. So maybe this is totally idealistic and just not realistic in a pandemic. But if they were just like, Dave Chappelle gets 100% of the money from this.
Yeah.
100%. You don't think Dave Chappelle is going to fucking kick it back, give you some specials, do business with you? Hey, Netflix, like, sorry. Like, I got, you know what I mean?
Everything like, there is an opportunity.
Netflix, if you're struggling, you're already struggling, HBO. Take one more hit, but it's like you're fucking Hail Mary, and you might have the number one entertainer have your back now.
The only thing I guess you'd have to weigh out, because we can now speak from this thinking like we're not placing a value on what Chappelle show does for HBO Max. And I bet they have some way to quantify that. They're looking at it and they're like, I mean, they're like X amount of people. So what if I said like, you know, because it's equally confusing that Friends can be worth $100 million in the year 2020, right? Yeah, so what if I said that Chappelle's show does generate, you know, $25 million worth of income for HBO Max, you know, and it's like, okay, then like, giving $25 million to James Chappelle, is that worth it? I don't know. I could say yes, but I could also be like, well, it's tough to just give away $25 million.
That number needs to be like $100 million for me to start to be like, well, wait a minute, you know? But I mean, then, but no, either way. Okay. If first of all, I'm always fascinated by the idea. It's the same thing as like Sirius XM where it's like, you really like, I can understand that we drive signups for Sirius XM. That's why it's crazy that Sirius won't pay us, because who else besides Howard Stern, and you have to make the argument that eventually Howard Stern is going to stop fucking driving subscriptions. Who else gets people to go, I will sign up for that. We're the only fucking ones, or we're one of the very few. But like, I have all these streaming services. I love all these shows. I love The Office. I don't love Friends. I love Seinfeld. I love Chappelle's show. But I never was like, I've never signed up for one based on something joining the streaming roster. And but I never got one from a show being, you know, sent back to the vault. But I guess people do that. But, okay, say HBO Max says Dave Chappelle's show is worth $100 million worth of signups. Well, what does that tell you? It tells you that Dave Chappelle is wildly valuable. Mm-hmm. So for get sure. him on your side. Mm-hmm, because if Chappelle's show from 2003 is worth $100 million, Chappelle's show new special in 2021 and 2022 and 2023 is going to be worth $200 million. So either way, it's either a small sum of money that you should be able to poo-poo or a large sum of money that tells you this man is more valuable than anybody on the planet.
Right. But that's why Netflix did it. But I think HBO Max could be like, you've got to deal with Netflix. Like, right, you're not our guy. We're making money off you.
Yeah.
And we don't really care because you're locked up.
You know, it's a dangerous play, but I think it's the risky one that pays off. You know, maybe Dave Chappelle says, thank you, 100% of the profits, and I'm going to keep doing Netflix specials. But if this is a man who's talking on stage about what's right and doing good business by people, I would hope, I'd hope he'd be like put his money where his mouth is and kind of do the right thing.
The only thing is, I think that their calculations are probably not based off of strict signups. I think that they like weight how much each thing is getting viewed, because Netflix also gave Adam Sandler the bag, and they were just like, listen, people fucking watch Adam Sandler movies. They just, it's not necessarily like this many X amount of people will sign up because they hear a new Adam Sandler movie is out. They're like, all of these movies just get watched, and they get watched a ton. That's value. So we're going to make more of that.
They just value that you're keeping people in the Netflix app.
Yeah. I think that there's probably an algorithm or a calculation that they can do. That's like, if this amount of different users are watching this show X amount of time, that means that they are, you know, X satisfied, and satisfaction correlates with growth or signups. I don't know if it's direct growth, but I think that they probably are like, you can only measure once when you say, hey, we just added this and see how many signups you get. You can probably measure satisfaction a little bit and being like, well, listen, this many people watch this. And that's probably how they decide what to cut. They're like, this show just isn't getting watched. You know, people can talk about it being great, but it's just, you know, it's always on demand and nobody's really watching it. So we're going to stop paying the licensing fees for that. So it's a complicated thing, but I could see how HBO could be like, we see that it's getting watched to this amount. We have that weighted as this value, and to give up that value for nothing is tough. But when you start calculating the PR and the future value, I think that, you know, that's the new way to think.
You had Suitman at HBO making big decisions for certain branches. Like, I don't think they're the best run organization right now when it comes to recognizing the value of like the new way of doing business and the new way of doing entertainment. And again, it's the one dude. He's the only one. Yeah. I mean, who else could really get you to like not watch a show you love or, you know, do what he says or she says?
Yeah. I mean, he's so like, and for us too, because we were
I would do it for Bill Burr. I would do what he says, but that's almost like, I feel like he's, you know, done me a solid personally too.
Right. I mean, I think you probably do it for Bert Kreischer too. Like anybody that you're now currently friends with, but you're talking about like the general public.
Yeah. Like if Chris Rock said to do it, I wouldn't care. You know, like there's this weird connection to at least my generation to Dave Chappelle, which is funny because he'd probably be like, ah, fuck you, white boy. You know, I don't give a shit about you. Like you and your parents are fucking the reason why my culture's held down. But like, I do feel, God, he's so fascinating in the way that he's just become this like storyteller. He's a guy too, who like similar in different ways, like Nate Bargatze and his voice and his cadence and his drawl, where just like everything he says hits differently.
Just talking.
Nate does it in a comedic way. Dave, it used to be funny that like, that, you know, that Dave Chappelle voice, like it used to be comedic, and now it's become like it's got this gravitas behind it where you're like,
well, he's also so smart, and maybe it takes a level of intelligence to be as funny as he is, but he is also just like, I'm just like, what do you think about foreign policy? Like, I need to hear because you're smart.
He seems well read, no doubt, very, very informed, and does seem smart. But do you think he's as smart as he sounds, or do you think he's just also like, he can make you, he makes it feel that, like he's got the gift of gab to the point that he can be hilarious. He can make you think he's a genius. He can make you think he's a historian.
Yeah.
A fucking, you know, a racial, like, you know, whatever. Or is he actually just like, I'm a fucking Mensa genius. Like, I'm a smart, I don't know. You could tell me either or, and I'd probably be equally as impressed if he was just that smart, or if he has the ability to make you feel like he's that smart.
I think when you're on his level of comedy, you just have the ability to like look at something and get to a deeper level. Like he can make things funny that are just seem very commonplace. So he can also look deep inside something and not get comedy out of it, just get perspective out of it, where he'll just explain race relations using an angle that you just haven't heard 1,000 times from every YouTube pundit. And you're like, oh shit. Like, was deep because he sees things differently.
He says on that 18-minute clip, he's like, they said I was crazy for leaving my show. They said I was smoking crack. And I was a devout Muslim at that point. I did not drink. I did not smoke. Now I do because you ruined my fucking life. And it's just so funny. And it was not like the audience kind of half laughed because I think they were like, oh shit, like they ruined your life. But it was so funny in the way he delivered it, but also like, oh wow. And I really believe though, the ultimate reason why all these guys succeed in comedy and then he takes it to another level. It's because when that dude can grab a mic in front of like 50,000 people and he is unfazed. He is not nervous. Like he delivered that this bit where he was explaining in parable form his entire career fight, you know? And he was just like taking hits off the cig and just kind of like chill. And I think the no nerves is like the first, you know, you have to be smart. There's a million other things, but the first, like the foundation and that building block is just like the rest of the goddamn world has a true phobia of this.
Yeah.
And I excel. He says it when he's like, I was 15. He said, as soon as I grabbed the mic, I was like, this is me. I'm good. Like I am good at this. At 15, you know, when everyone else like, I had to fail for 30 years before I ever even had a successful set. He was like, I was 15 and running with the big dogs. You know?
What do they say? I mean, this percentage varies every time. Sometimes it's 60, sometimes it's 80, sometimes it's 90% of communication is nonverbal. And when you can see by the way he stands, like you're just
he sits all the time now.
Yeah.
With like his foot up on the speaker. And, you know, he walks around, he doesn't, you know, it's, and I'm sure it's all tactical when he hits the mic on his leg and when he laughs and, you know, it's all like, if I do it this many times per hour, it's good. You know, it's all planned out, but it's also, I think it's either all planned out or none of it's planned out, like one or the other, where it's just like, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And it is funny though, cause it's dramatic as fuck, you know, it's dramatic. He's relating everything to like, you know, I did see somebody say like, you know, champagne problems right now, but like I got one reply on Twitter. Most everybody was like, you know, I stand with you. But one person was like, right now, you know, you're complaining about this. Like you're still a millionaire. You're healthy, blah, blah, blah. And there is some truth to that. And what we're talking about ultimately is like, I want my funny skits to make money. You know, like if you want to really break it down, you could poke holes in this being like, it's not life or death. But the way he relates it to like, you know, usually it has slavery undertones where it's like,
right. And also though, it's just, there's two sides to that too, right? Like these big hulking corporations that just suck the life out of everything could also do the right thing for once and just say, hey, you know what? You actually do deserve that money. Like he's just standing up here going, listen, in the middle of, you know, all this tragedy and terrible stuff, these white guys who just bought and sold some kind of asset are reaping the benefits. And I'm saying I should get some of that benefit too. So those people, the people on the other side of the conversation are just absolved from this. Like, you know, you could very easily look at this and say, how come the HBO executives are saying like, no, in the middle of a pandemic are saying, no, fuck you, creator. Fuck you, artist. I'm keeping your money. So it's like, yeah, Chappelle is complaining about it in the middle of a pandemic, but like he's the one who he feels he's being wronged in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, what? I can just steal stuff from artists because it's a pandemic. No, you can't do that.
It's more what I'm impressed with is like to me, for my life, like podcasting and the blog and social media is life and death to me. But I also have this like understanding that it's not actually life and death.
Right.
So when I talk about it, We do it a little bit here on Mail Time, but if I were to really be honest about it, I would love to sit here on Mail Time and talk about the nitty gritty ins and outs of my contract and the industry and what's right and wrong and cool and shitty and you know, talk about it. And I'm sure people do find that interesting, but you know, only a certain person can do it where people respect it and want to hear it from you. Dave Chappelle has like earned the right by being the best, by being the most controversial, by being the most like moral, like he had a fucking, he took a stand and gave up $50, $46 million, you know? Like if I were to do it, I could see people being like, stop. When I have done it, people have been like, stop fucking complaining, you know? And he has just done it and ascended to a level where everybody respects it and will listen to what he says. And, you know, and that's like part of like, what's amazing too, is that like, he just commands that level, you know? And I think a lot of people listening probably have not heard the storyboards that I did. I did like a documentary podcast on Chappelle when he first made his return after like disappearing to Ohio for years. And the one joke that I use in the documentary to explain everything is kind of exactly what you said about how smart he is. Like, it's like a 10-minute joke where he starts at like the beginning of like colonial America or something, or like the beginning of like, you know, the civil, whatever it is. It's like, he goes through like American history. No, this is what it was. It's not that deep. It's not that far back. It's like, he goes back to like the beginning of like the civil rights movement, and year by year, decade by decade, he explains all of this shit that was going on throughout America for minutes on end, no jokes, no laughing, no nothing. And then he gets to like present day and he's like, and all of that time, Bill Cosby was raping bitches. And it was just like, oh my fucking God. This dude had to have the knowledge of all of like civil rights in America. He had to have the balls to make a rape joke. He had to, you know, and do it all in a 10-minute stretch. And that's like the difference. It's like, when you have that knowledge with that timing and delivery and you put it all together, you're the greatest of all time. And then when you're the greatest of all time, you can do way more than just make people laugh. You can talk about society and money and economics and what's right and wrong. But it is interesting. Like, as much as I believe in it and like, I'm not going to watch, there was a part of me that fairly quickly after saying like, shit, I ride with Chappelle, I fairly quickly was like, but he did sign this contract. And that is right. Kind of like, so, I mean, on some level as a businessman, he's got to get it, you know,
again on Chappelle.
There never be
an executive.
Yeah. I mean, if he's ever, when you're on the other side of the table, I think you very quickly go like, well, I got to own all your fucking content or there's no point in me doing this.
Right.
So, you know, if he ever is an executive, he better change the fucking script,
right?
Because otherwise he's playing right into what he's talking about.
Well, is it Lil Xan who you said was saying like, listen, the label did a bunch of stuff for me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, they earn their check
with labels because they get you money quickly and they have resources you'll never have.
People were saying about Alex, like, why isn't Alex just go independent? And I'm like, listen, she can. And maybe she eventually will. But right now, she has a studio to record in. She has a producer to edit her stuff. If she needs somebody to film, we send somebody out there to film. We have a huge sales team that, you know, whether better or worse, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. But it's like
a legal team that's going to protect you if shit goes down. I mean, there's a lot of
advantages to it. And if you want to say, listen, I want to own the IP, it's like, well, the IP is what we're paying for. So we're doing all this stuff. We're giving you a salary. You know, I don't know if she cares about this. I care about health benefits, 401k. These are things that, you know, like companies do. You want to be a solo entrepreneur, you have to do all that stuff yourself. And when you have to rent your studio time and you have to pay somebody to edit, well, I think she does her own editing too, but you know, this is not just about Alex. This is about people in general. It's like, you can either take the money and the ease, and they are betting. What's funny is every time there's an agreement like this, it's a bet. Somebody is betting that they can make more money off you than they are going to pay you. So when you don't, when you see them making more than you get paid, all of a sudden it feels unfair. But it's like, yeah, but that's the bet.
That's the bet. Yeah.
You said, I'll take this money up front.
Alex Cooper, the difference here is that it's HBO, not Comedy Central. And I think somebody would be very wise if they had swooped in and were like, all right, you come with us and we'll give you everything Dave Portnoy is not. Because then they look like the hero. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like when you made the initial investment, I get it. It's like, I got to get my return. But when you can come in secondary and get all the good PR, and then every other content creator is like, oh, we're going to go with this person because they, you know what I mean? That's where I think you can get the value in like giving them what they want or whatever.
Yeah.
If you've laid out, you know, your initial investment or time or resources, then yeah, you got to recoup. But there's so much PR to be gained. I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being a little too pie in the sky, but I think having seen what I've seen, I definitely know that like other content creators would appreciate to a point of like loyalty and like, I'll roll with you and make you money now. if you kind of roll with them initially, you know?
Right. Doing the right thing.
Doesn't really matter. None of this matters, though, because we've got goddamn monoliths appearing in the Utah desert. And, I mean, that's either aliens or someone with way too much goddamn time on their hands, huh?
I mean, like, you've seen crop circles before, right? Which are, like, 100% created by people who are just bored in the fields.
The people who did – I wish crop circles just popped up. Could you imagine if crop circles popped up for the first time during the internet era?
Yeah.
We were just awesome. Like, what? And then when we found out, like, on the podcast, the guy who just walked in a circle with a rope and a stick on his foot for hours on end.
But can you believe that people did that before the internet? Why would you do that?
Why would you do it?
And I guess, can't even go viral.
I guess at the end of the day, it's not like it didn't take that much time.
And if you like live in a place where there's a bunch of fields to do this in, you're like, I got nothing to do.
I'm more impressed with it, like the symmetry of it all, where I guess you got to have a rope and always from the center.
Right. That's how you do the circles, at least. Yeah. But some of that stuff is intricate.
So for the people who don't know, there was in this Utah desert in like the middle of, it looks like the planet of Mars. It's like red rocks.
Right.
There was this monolith, this metallic cylinder, like obelisk. It's like a, you know, monolith. I don't know if people know what a monolith is.
It's shaped like a monolith.
The giant fucking rectangle. And there's a quick video of these four guys. They said, I think like a helicopter team or some shit spotted it from the sky. It was probably reflecting. And then they like went down into this cavern. This cavern. What's it called? Like a valley or some shit, like in between two rocks.
Yeah.
And you know,
it was canyon, this, maybe.
Yeah. Canyon. It's like this, like, I don't know, 8 foot fucking tall metallic thing. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? I mean, this, you know, this is probably something like if you work in like a fucking factory, you could easily make a mirror. You put a fucking mirror on a fucking metal cube and it looks like this. I don't know. But the fuck, man? What's going on?
If you took like a shop class in the 90s, you could probably like weld this thing together and just throw it out in the desert. But see, like, I would love, I mean, like, we should do this eventually. We should just be like, let's fucking do something super weird and see if we can get some podcasts to talk about it.
I'm telling you, man, once we're rich, it's going to be all scavenger hunts and fucking alien hoaxes and dumb shit like that.
Yeah,
that's
with
my retirement time.
That's basically what Mr. Beast does. You ever watch Mr. Beast on YouTube? Yeah. Where he's just like, I don't know, like, let's just like fill the swimming pool up with like weird jelly.
Shit. Yeah, I want to.
I don't know why.
Yeah, why not? Like right now, if you filled up a fucking swimming pool with Ocean Spray cranberry jelly, I mean, people go bananas for it.
Right.
Like Thanksgiving, and you have some fat person do a belly flop into it. If I had Coach Doug's do a cannonball into a pool of cranberry right now.
This is what we need to figure out, though, because like we can have these ideas. We just need to like, we probably need to get a sponsor on board. It's tough to be like, I don't know, this will cost like 20 grand or something like that. Like, I don't know.
Now, have you heard of the show Utopia?
I think so.
I cannot believe this show does not get more love. I think it's pretty old by now. It's about a comic book that's predicting like the future. Like the first comic is all about like an outbreak of diseases, and like there's an outbreak of disease in the world, and if you read the comic and look at the clues, it's all there. Like this drawing is shaped like Uganda, and there's five pictures because there was initially five positive cases. And so all these nerds who are looking for Easter eggs, like imagine if you went down the Reddit hole of a comic you loved and it was predicting COVID-19 and Donald Trump's presidency and all this shit. So now season one starts with, the first one was called Dystopia, and now Utopia is coming out and it's like the sequel to the comic.
Okay.
And all these people are scrambling. There's like a bit, like it was, the comic didn't come out. It was found in someone's attic, like a grandfather died.
Right.
This person's like, let me put this on the internet for sale. And all these people are bidding on it. And there's like assassins trying to get it because they know that like the information in this comic is going to like predict, you know, like the end of times or whatever. But it's fucking dope. I'm two episodes in and it's like,
What's it on?
Amazon Prime. John Cusack and Rainn Wilson are in it, but they're not in the first couple episodes. They're like the stars of it, but not in the first couple episodes. But there are, I mean, people are dying right away, left and right. And there's like, I mean, it's intense. It's dope. And it's like, I never heard anything about it.
Well, did you see this thing called The Last President? That is, no. Seems like it's predicting the future. Does it? No. There's a TikTok on it. In the 1800s, there is a book called, I think there's two books, and one of them is called The Last President. The protagonist is a child named Baron Trump.
Get the fuck out of here.
And his guide is known as the Don. And there is whoever ends up the last president. I can't remember if it's Baron Trump or if it's the Don or whatever, whatever. Has a close confidant. His first name is Laif, L-A-F-E. What do you think his last name is?
Laif?
Well, Laif doesn't really have anything to do with it. The last name is the key.
A Trump guide?
This is a friend of some, either a friend of Baron or a friend of the Don. Laif Pence.
No, I mean, I was going to say like, you know, his like close confidant would be Pence, but Pence is a fucking jabroni. He's like a nobody. I mean, how would you predict Pence? He fucking sucks.
I mean, everything, unless this is like a super elaborate hoax.
Yeah, it's a book from the 1800s, you said?
Yes.
Like, how do we know? Like, is there like a library record report of this or something?
Yeah, it's a real book. Like, the book is...
You know what I mean? Like, how do you know that?
What's that?
Like,
it's available on Amazon.com.
But we know it's from the 1800s.
I mean, the book is called 1900 or The Last President. And let's
just say when it was published.
It should. Where would it show that?
That's what I mean. Like, you could make these things and...
Yes, first edition, 1896.
96, yeah. But, you know, like...
But the funny thing is, this all went...
crazy with conspiracy theories. It's like, all that happened is I Googled this, and 1896 popped up.
You Googled what?
It's almost like when you say, like, how do I know the fucking earth is round? Like, I fucking read this thing. It's like, well, what is that thing you're reading? Like, how do I know this was published in 1896?
I mean, I think that's something you can confirm, right? I mean, like...
You definitely can, but how many people are taking the time to, like... That's what I mean. Are they going to, like, the fucking...
I mean, like, the description on Amazon says this little booklet was penned at the end of the 19th century. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess if you could get Amazon in on it and, like, they rigged it.
Because then, like, The Last President, the novel on – that must be something different, yeah. There's just another one that was published in 2013 called The Last President. But, yeah, this is not the – it's not 1900 or The Last President. I mean, yeah, I mean, it probably is. I'm just – it just seems so impossible to me.
So this summary was written 2 years ago. So this is not, like, something that, like, was faked – because of all the hysteria now, but yeah. I mean, but 2 years ago, it's not like this stuff wasn't at a fever pitch. The books are called Baron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey and 1900 or comma The Last President. Both were written in the 1890s. The plot of the first book about Baron Trump includes a story of a young boy who finds himself a secret portal and time travels. Dun, 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 dun.
Baron Trump is wild tall, bro.
Trump's adventures begin in Russia and are guided thanks to directions provided by the master of all masters, a man named Don. I mean, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
Oh, wait, it gets weirder. The story begins with a scene from a panicked New York City in early November. It describes a state of uproar after an election in which an enormously popular outsider is granted power.
Get the fuck out of here.
After the chaotic scene in NYC, we find out that the man who won the presidency is extremely wealthy and resides on Fifth Avenue. Come on. Like, this is predicting the future.
What's going on?
The last president. Read the book.
Or, I mean, is it just that, like, I mean, does the Trump family, like, date back that long? Where it's just like, yeah, the Trumps have been, you know, living in New York.
I was like, did they name their kid Barron after this character? Because that makes
a lot
more sense.
It's like if, you know, the Rockefellers are, but even that, it's like those names don't really last, like, that long. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As crazy as it sounds, one of Lockwood's characters becomes president. He began choosing people for his cabinet. One of the first people he picked was a man named Leif Pence.
That's where you lose me, just because Pence is such a fucking nobody that it's like, right. How could you possibly predict that asshole?
But I mean, maybe the Leif Pence in the book is not that big a deal either. Yeah. Maybe he's just one of the people that was picked, you know?
Barron Trump is so tall and such a funny character in my mind that he could be a time traveler or something. Yeah, I think so. Like Dave Carton dropped on air the other day that Dave Portnoy was seen with Tiffany Trump. Dave has since cleared up. Like, they were at the restaurant, like, together. Like, they just happened to be at the restaurant at the same time. They were together. They did not sit down or whatever. But we were talking about, like, what Dave could do, like, now or next to, like, stir the pot. If Dave, like, chilled with Barron Trump, that would be such a move now.
He's on, like, BFFs.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. Like, he's, like, playing, like, one-on-one basketball with Barron Trump or some shit for a Barstool video. That would be the biggest.
That dude hasn't said – how old is he, actually?
I think he's, like, in high school. I want to say he's, like, 18, right?
I mean, I think if that guy – when he makes a move, you know, when he goes out and –
I think he's young because the whole thing is that he's wild tall.
Wildly tall, yeah, right?
Yeah, he's 14. Right. And I think he's, like, 6 feet tall.
But we're not far away from him. Like, you know, it would probably be hopping on TikTok. It's actually probably going to be Parler. But he, you know, when he starts, I mean, he's going to, he can either skyrocket to the top if he's got any of his dad's brains, or he could be like his uncle's and everybody would be like, oh, all right, you're a clown.
Fucking Barron's out there just fucking dancing on TikTok, man. Oh my God. I mean, if the Milielos can't just eat dinner without getting canceled, I can't imagine Barron Trump's going to have much success on there.
I mean,
so.
They are already talking about him on, you know, in MAGA country, they're already talking about him like the prince that was promised. They're like, you know, he will be our savior. He's 14.
He's 14 and he's undoubtedly a fucking retarded asshole. You know what I mean? He's undoubtedly like, how could he possibly in the last like 4 years could have been getting any sort of like education on like what's, you know what I mean? Well, it's just like,
the post that I saw is a picture of him, just a candid taken where he looks a little like menacing just because he's like probably a grumpy teenager who just like, you know, was like looking grumpy. And they were like, he's seen how his father was disrespected. He's seen this country was stolen. He will have his revenge. It's like, bro, all right.
That guy.
But it's only because they've seen Don Jr. and Eric, and they're like, well, we need somebody better than this.
That this kid, like every other kid who has ever gotten out of White House life, like out of the spotlight, he's like, we get to go back to our penthouse apartments made of gold. Yeah, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Give me a fucking break. That kid can't wait to get you. He doesn't want any part of this life anymore. He wants to just get hand jobs and shit. He is a 8-foot-tall, 14-year-old giraffe. That kid wants to fucking kill himself right now, let alone become the next goddamn president. That kid's got pimples and all sorts. He doesn't know what the fuck. The world is a goddamn whirlwind to that giraffe.
He's a time traveler, though. So he's from the 1800s, or maybe he went back to the 1800s first, and now he's back here.
Kept growing the whole time. That's the problem.
He's 200 years old. He's not that tall.
If you could grow for 200 years, you'd be 7 feet tall, too. Shit, man. We're going to have to do a deep dive on that one next. We'll go into some – it's about time. Where's my tinfoil? I think my cleaning lady threw out my tinfoil hat again. I keep making these. I mean, it's very clearly not just your old, you're any old tinfoil lady.
I mean, if anything, you would think it was like one of the kids' toys. Like, you know, like Shay built this, made this.
It's one of the kids' toys. It's the kid. It's my toy. But yeah, I think it's about time to do a conspiracy episode. So email us, tweet at us. What are some new conspiracies you want to hear that you've heard? Birds has taken off. You know, a lot of people have been converted to the birds aren't real. Well, what's next? Let us know. And we'll
Barron Trump, time traveler. We got to
We'll kick that off with a deep dive on what the fuck this book is and how, like, what the fuck is going on. If it's a tiny pamphlet, you actually have a good chance of me reading it.
No, I don't.
Nah. No. Because if it's from 1896, it's written in, like, old English, and that's...
Absolutely. Not, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I, every now and then I'll try and, like, go back and read one of the classics and no. like these stories were, you know, when you hear, like, the summary of a story, like, I watched Ratchet Netflix, I think, and then I went back and tried to read, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and even that's not even that old, but it's just like, this sucks, this is boring. But I remember once trying to read not Moby Dick, because this was an assignment. It's not like I just wanted to read this, but it was another book written by the same author, who I can't remember who wrote Moby Dick.
Herman Melville,
right? And I literally could read, I read like an entire page, and I was like, I do not know what happened on this page. I cannot comprehend it at all. I remember mom and dad tried to, like, read it out loud to me, and we were like, we don't get it either. I just didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. Now those guys were assholes. Those guys wrote to be assholes back then. They were like, we're going to come up with our own language and our own dialect, and we're going to confuse you and make you think that we're smart.
Right.
And apparently maybe also predict the future.
Ratchet was really good, though. I really liked Ratchet.
Yeah, it was good. Sarah Paulson's fucking unbelievable.
I definitely thought that it was like a... It's like they're signed on for like 5 seasons. So I thought that we were going to get to the book, and then you just don't get like, it's all prequel. It's there many, many years before the book takes place. So they're like, by the end of the series, I'm like, well, I don't know if I can be invested for like 4 years, but
yeah, we are at the point where it's strictly anthology series. Oh, let me quickly, before we're done, The Undoing. By the time, there's only one episode left. The Undoing is the worst show that I've ever wanted to fucking know the answer to. There's so many ridiculously dumb plot holes. Why would that guy ever have a public defender? You could not possibly blow his amount of wealth in a matter of months the way he said he did. Even if you did do that, high-profile cases, you always have some hotshot attorney who takes the case. Why does Nicole Kidman go for walks? Nobody in New York City just walks around the streets of fucking Harlem at the middle of the night, and like, you black it out and you forget. There's just so many dumb things that's just like, yeah, why wasn't the fucking husband, by the way, spoiler alert for all this, stop listening, why wasn't the husband, you know, investigated? Like, tons of stupid shit. And I know the ending's going to be stupid. The ending is either going to be that it's just at first I thought it was the kid, and then they show that the kid has like serious evidence, and it's like, well, that was a little on the nose, but there is only one episode left, so they might just have to wrap shit up because it's only 6 episodes. I think a limited engagement is cool, but you got to do like 8 or 10. 6 is like, there's not enough time to do anything really of substance. So maybe it's the kid, and they're just gonna have to like run with that. It's probably gonna be that the blonde woman was the other mistress, and it's like mistress on mistress crime. I think we're at the point where the grandfather, the kid's in on it. The grandfather's trying to help cover it up. Nicole Kidman has like blackout episodes and doesn't realize that she was a part of it too. And that Hugh Grant is trying to protect everyone the same way he protected his fucking family. It's going to be something stupid.
I don't know. That sounds pretty good.
And it's going to be entertaining, but it's going to be like, well, that could never have fucking happened. But I can't wait to find out what it is. It's going to happen. The twist is going to happen, and I'm going to go, fuck this show. I know it, but I can't wait.
That's like, I was thinking about Serial today, and it's, you know, like 6 years since that podcast dropped, and like, that guy's still just in jail. He's just like, no big deal. But it's like, you like to think of these convoluted things. Like, there's only two possibilities: either Adnan did it, or like a random killer did it. There's no like, oh, then there was this conspiracy or that conspiracy. It's just like, there's only two choices. It's like, maybe it was him, maybe it wasn't. There, you know, there's no like blackout episodes, and that only happens on TV because they need to make it interesting.
Or, you know, we ran with those for fun during the podcast episodes, but there's not, you know.
Right. There's only two choices.
By the way, shout out to my guy Scott Peterson, who has been getting paid.
Has he?
He's been getting like taxpayer benefit dollars while in jail on death row. Like something like 400 grand has been given to like him and other death row inmates in like a wild scam involving taxpayer money. Like, listen, I'm pretty outspoken that I think that Scott Peterson got a raw deal in his trial. I don't think it's a good PR move to be getting paid while on death row. I don't think that's going to win you over any supporters, Scott. Collecting a paycheck to be on death row for murdering your wife and unborn son. Not a great look, Scott. The SPA team, the Scott Peterson appeal team, is going to have a fucking problem with that look. Good luck, SPA team. Happy Thanksgiving. Don't watch Chappelle Show. See you next week for conspiracies. Let's go.
Things is on the up and up. Things is looking swell. Things is on the up and up. Far as I can tell. Things is on the up and up. Things is looking swell. Things is on the up and up. Far as I can tell.
Well, I woke up this morning about 7:30. Took a shower, cause my ass was kinda dirty. Clothes was clean, face fresh, teeth was shining. No need to iron, wrinkle free, so I'm styling. Pants fitting fresh, physique is looking slim. Had a bowl of cereal, thank God the milk wasn't skim. Coffee was bubbling, the dishwasher was empty. Hopped in my whip, no need for my 10 speed. Went to pick Tibbs up, car was
sparkling.
Pulled up to his crib with perfect parallel.
Walking.
My day is going so swell, pardon the jogging, but it's nostalgic as hell. Who knows what the day could bring, raking in a little cheddar. Tibbs, look at the weather, the station lasts forever. Just a super MC, can't be denying the creds. I gotta keep waking up on this side of the bed.
Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell.
I wake up in the morning and fell out of bed. I said the same damn dream, getting visions ahead. So I hop up in the shower, throw on the baby powder. Feeling old school polos on Eddie Bauer. Six and steady honking while I'm twisting twigs. Get up with frequency, studio and make hits. It's now 2 hours, three jams done right. Stroll through the net, fatty banger, alright. The good mood's increasing while I'm steady thinking. Can I have 1,000 Puerto Ricans for the weekend? Looking on luscious like Angie Martinez. More pleasantries, more trees and no stress. By 4:55, you know my head's a mess. I said 2:15 frequency and 6 left. And 5:22 life is at its best. Because 6:35 sweaty sex with my ex. Today was a good day and tomorrow's next. Hey now, things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things is looking swell. Things are only up and up, far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things is looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things is looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell.
Smooth and swingable because the beat is rough and rugged. Dirty diamond in the rough, I said I shining other nuggets.
I found one of those deep inside the wishing well. Love this beat, you could say I kiss and tell, cause this shit is swell.
Excel upon super with my funky dope maneuvers. Eradicated old mistakes and no bloopers.
Invisible pooper scoopers when I walk the puppy. And when the sun sets, I gotta change my middle name to Lucky.
Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell. Things are only up and up, things are looking swell. Things are only up and up, as far as I can tell.
As I can tell, things are only up and up, things is looking swell. Things is only up and up, as far as I can tell. Things is only up and up, things is looking swell. Things is only up and up, as far as I can tell.